Hello and welcome to a special podcast episode brought to you as part of Clean Sport Week 2025. Today we are once again teaming up with experts from our partners at Dodson & Horrell and NAF to explore the topic of naturally occurring prohibited substances, which you might have heard referred to as NOPs, and how they relate to clean sport and making sure that our horses are fit and well. Our experts are also going to share some simple tips that you can implement at your own yard to reduce the risk of contamination and protect your horse's welfare and well-being, because at the end of the day, that's our priority in all of this. So joining me to discuss this, you'll have heard from them already if you listened to our series from Equine Health Week, but they are back again. First up, we have got Dr. Margaret Mass, who is the veterinary and nutrition advisor from Dodson & Horrell. She's been a vet 10 years, with seven of those spent in equine practice, both in the UK and in Europe. Her role at D&H involves helping the team and their customers with technical information and product advice, providing marketing support and responding to nutritional management queries. Welcome, Marga.
Thank you. Thanks, Rachel, for having us again.
We're delighted to have you. And joining us as well is Kate Hoare, who is the head nutritionist at NAF, where she has worked for nearly 28 years. A registered equine nutritionist, she's a member of the British Equestrian Trade Association's Feed Committee, secretary of the European Workshop on Equine Nutrition Association, and has been widely published on a variety of nutrition topics. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, Rachel. Nice to be talking to you and Marga again.
As with Margaret, we are delighted to have you as well. So first off, I've mentioned it there in the intro, but what actually are these naturally occurring prohibited substances and how can they enter our horses' systems?
So NOPS stands for naturally occurring prohibited substances, and they are those substances defined under the beta NOPS list and also detailed within the beta NOPS code, which we'll cover later on. These are substances that can either be naturally present within a certain feed ingredient or raw material that goes into a horse's feed, or they can occur within the feed or the supplement as a result of obviously accidental cross-contamination during the production chain or the supply chain of that product. So for the purpose of the beta NOPS code, these substances are broken down depending on their priorities. So we have a high priority list, a low priority list, and then a herbal list, which we will give some examples of. The high priority list contains substances such as caffeine, theobromin, which is a component of cacao. We also have theophylline, which is the substance present in tea. Morphine, atropine, codeine, etc. These are considered the high priority ones. And then within the low priority ones are substances that can be found naturally in certain plant materials. For example, there is a substance called hordenin, which accidentally can be found in barley products.
Yeah, and in addition to that, we have the herbal list that Marga just touched on, and that's things like valerian, which some of you know we traditionally we might be looking to use as a calmer, but would now not be suitable for competition horses. And more recently, from 2016, which I say recently, nearly 10 years ago, Devil's Claw Harpagophytum, which is the active substance within Devil's Claw, that was added to the herbal list as well.
So you mentioned that obviously there have been some recent changes. Is that list reviewed regularly then?
Yes, absolutely. The list is reviewed and that's an ongoing process. And actually, sort of beta are looking at it currently in terms of, are there any new substances of interest? Are there any substances of interest that are not strictly a NOPS, a natural substance, but they might drop into accidental contamination as well? So yes, it's always under review. And as and when there are updates, those are published into the revised list. Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's also worth mentioning that these reviews are also done in conjunction or in collaboration with sports regulatory bodies, as in equestrian sport regulatory bodies. So the changes on the beta NOPS code may reflect changes with regards to FEI rules or IFHA rules, which are the racing authority.
And these lists, the full list, if you do need to find it, is on the beta website and also on the FEI website as well. You can find it there. So we've talked about these substances and some of the examples, but how does that relate to clean sport then, which is our theme for this week?
So I'm sure you've probably covered elsewhere in your theme. Equestrian clean sport actually sort of comes from WADA clean sport, if you like. And it's really just the principle of wanting to have a level playing field, which I think we can all get on board with. We all want, when we go out and compete at whatever level, we want to know that we're competing fairly and we're competing on an even playing field with those around us. So that means that we as riders are competing fairly, but also obviously equestrianism is unique really in that you have this other body involved who also has to be competing fairly. So it's really about having that that level playing field. But for all of us, and I think Marga can probably expand on this as a vet, it's also actually about equine welfare as well, isn't it, Marga?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when we are talking about substances that could affect the horse's pain threshold or pain levels. So the presence of such substances within the horse's body may mask pain, which could therefore lead to the use of that horse in competition when they really shouldn't from a welfare perspective. And I think when it comes to, again, the awareness of these NOPs is also important to highlight that both the FEI and the IFHA state that such substances have no thresholds. Therefore, there is zero tolerance to the presence of these substances within the horse at the time of competing. And therefore, there is this collective effort that Kate was talking about to ensure that such substances are not to be found in feeds and supplements for competition horses. We can discuss later on, perhaps in more practical terms, how that relates to the day-to-day management of a yard, particularly where both competition and non-competition horses coexist.
Well, I think that's a really important point there about, you're saying there, Margaret, about the fact that these substances can change the horse's pain threshold, and if they've got them in their system, they might be doing things that they might not otherwise be comfortable doing, and we can push them beyond their limits. And obviously at the end of the day, equine welfare and wellbeing is our priority in everything we do. And that's why this becomes such an important topic. And it's why it's so important that people have an awareness of it, because, you know, because it can be easy to sort of say, oh, well, why does this really matter? And actually this is exactly why it matters. So we talked there, why this is so important, why we need to know about it. I'm guessing as well there's going to be an importance there. If we're talking about foreign substances entering the horse's system, ones that we are not intending to be there, there must be a relevance there for non-competition horses as well as competition horses and the clean sport side of things.
Yes, absolutely. I think for both, for both competition and non-competition, if you've got youngsters or at the other end of the age scale, if you've got retired horses, something like the NOP scheme, it's a very, essentially what it is, and we'll perhaps talk in a bit more detail later, but essentially it's just a high quality audit. It's like any feed audit, but it goes to the nth degree. So it's all about traceability, production facility, how are these things made, how are they packaged, how are they transported. It's all about controlling the quality at every step. So, you know, we all want that for our horses, don't we? Where no matter what level we compete at or if they're retired, we want to know that we're feeding them a good quality product. And actually, that's one of the things I take most from the NOP scheme, is that you can just be confident that it's a really well-made, good quality product, as well as being suitable for competition.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think ultimately, the beta NOP scheme offers a level of reassurance that when a company is accredited under this scheme, is because they wish to demonstrate that they are compromised or committed to best practice in minimizing that risk of contamination and the presence of such NOPs. I think it's also important to highlight perhaps at this point that this scheme is not just open to feed and supplement manufacturers, but actually manufacturers of any of the components of such products, as well as the marketers of feeds and supplements, as well as suppliers of any type of raw material or other ingredients. So I think it's probably a broader industry definition when it comes to who can be involved. Yeah.
And actually, that's not just a choice, it's a requirement. So we as manufacturers, when we're sourcing our ingredients, those ingredient suppliers have to have the same level of quality audit, you know, right back to it's sort of, you know, from the field where it's grown to your feed room, there's quality assurance all the way along that line.
And how, I mean, I should point out as well here, both your companies are part of this scheme, and this is something that you both take incredibly seriously. As a consumer, then, how do you know that the product you're buying complies with the Beet & Ops scheme?
So there's a very simple logo on the packaging. It's a Beta logo, and there are a couple of different Beta logos, depending on that, you know, Beta covers a number of different schemes. So a company might just be a Beta member. That doesn't mean that they're NOPS assured, or they might be signed up to one of the other schemes, such as the EGUS scheme or something, which is not necessarily aligned. So you do have to look specifically for that wording, naturally occurring prohibited substances, which is written around the logo. Have a good look at the logo. And the other way to do it, it is simply on the Beta website. There is a company checker on there, and you can pop your company name in and see whether the feed you're using is aligned or not. And of course, the other most simple way is to ask the company.
And does that logo then, is that 100% guarantee that you're not going to find these products in your feed?
No, that logo is never 100% a guarantee. It's just an assurance seal of the commitment of that business to external audit periodically, external audits to assure that the good practices are put in place to minimize that risk. In a similar vein, we tend to not recommend following claims on product packaging with regards to FEI compliance, for instance. The FEI itself discourages the following of that principle when it comes to choosing a feed or a supplement, because it's actually not something that the FEI offers, for example, that auditing system to ensure that a feed or a supplement is compliant with their rules, but actually it's the responsibility on the one side of the manufacturer of that product to minimize the risk of NOPS, as well as the role of the person responsible, which in all cases is ultimately the rider of the horse or the driver, so that they are, to the best of their knowledge, sure that the feed or the supplement that you're giving to that they are giving to that horse doesn't contain NOPS.
Yeah, and I think that it's a really important point to make about the guarantee. You know, we don't make a guarantee. No NOPS accredited company will make a guarantee. And I think those, you do see them. You do see companies marketing saying 100% safe to compete on, you know, 100% guaranteed, no banned substances. Such is the complexity of possible contamination. If I saw that, I would run a mile from that company, because any company that will make that claim cannot understand the risk. And if they don't understand the risk, they're actually more likely to fall foul of it. So not only would I, you know, I would actively discourage, as do NOPS members, actively discourage not using any company making claims that they can't substantiate with regard to competition.
So ultimately what we're saying is that the scheme is essentially that the companies who are accredited are doing the utmost that they can to ensure that those prohibited substances aren't appearing in their products or in the ingredients that they're supplying. But I mean, as you say, it's incredibly complicated, and to try and make a guarantee is pretty much impossible. But at least you know, having chosen a product that fits in with that scheme, that you are doing the utmost you can in return to keep your horse, you know, clean from contamination.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think just quickly, while we're on that, I think it's worth saying that if the worst happened, and you know, we all touch wood at this point that it doesn't, but if the worst happened and you did get a positive test, if you can demonstrate to BE, to FEI, that you have followed best practice, then actually you're more likely to be looked on, you know, leniently, reasonably. If you can say, well, look, this is the product I was using, it is NOPS accredited, this is the batch number that I've kept a record of, you know, or keeping that type of record, it helps us as manufacturers to trace any potential issue, but it will help you, you know, with your defense that you've chosen best practice. If you say, well, you know, this chap drove down our drive and told us that this magic potion would make him jump higher, then sorry, you know, that you're not going to have much of a defense.
So you mentioned best practice in there then, Kate. So what are some of the things that we can be doing on the yards with our horses to ensure, as well as choosing an accredited product, what are some of the things we can be doing to avoid contamination and try and do our utmost to compete under clean sport rules?
So I think from a vet perspective, it's also worth mentioning the control medication category. So I know we've been speaking all along about NOPS as a broader category of substances. NOPS would fall under what we call banned substances under FEI, the IFAHA rules, but these actually belong to a wider category, which is called prohibited substances. People use the banned word a bit interchangeably, but actually they make a clear differentiation, as in the regulatory bodies differentiate clearly between what is a prohibited substance for which there is no tolerance, therefore no threshold, therefore it can't be used, not even in training, with controlled substances, which may include medications that are authorized to be given as long as a withdrawal time is observed before the horse enters a competition. So if we kind of consider both, from the feed and supplement point of view and the medication point of view, I think Kate has touched on this already a little bit, but being aware, so everyone on the yard that is involved in the care of those horses should be aware of who is on the medication, who is under a certain supplement. So if you've already taken all of the steps towards purchasing feeds and supplements that are manufactured by accredited companies, that's already the first step. But then even when you are on the yard, for example, with Devil's Claw situation, if the yard staff are aware of which horse this supplement is intended for, then they can minimize the risk of a competition horse accidentally coming into contact with that supplement, because Devil's Claw would actually be one of those controlled substances that must be withdrawn from the horse's diet in order for the horse to be clean to compete. So that would be kind of one first step, is almost treating supplements as medications, especially when they contain this kind of supplements. One good strategy in that regard is perhaps having, when it comes to medication or supplements containing controlled substances, is to have one person dedicated to it, so one person responsible for delivering that, and then being quite aware when it comes to hygiene, so washing hands between horses, avoiding the sharing of feed buckets, for example. There is a huge risk of accidental ingestion of either medication or supplements when horses share buckets and the buckets are not rinsed in between. There is risk of residual contamination staying in the bucket, and then it can be hard sometimes to trace it back, but it's actually a pretty easy accidental route. And then also from a vet point of view, especially with oral medications, it's important to dispose adequately of any residual medication that may be left on the yard. Sometimes a horse will be weaned off a treatment after a certain period of time, even when we still have a little bit of medication left. It's important to get rid of it in the adequate manner. You can either give the residual amount to your vet, or you can take it to a local pharmacy, but not having it, you know, around, kind of exposed in the feed room, which would be definitely the biggest concern. And then also from a staff behavior point of view, which again can be an easy route to problems or even disaster, is the consumption of coffee, chocolate, tea in the feed room, especially at competition yards, where that accidental contamination with those actually NOPS substances that are present in coffee, tea, chocolate, etc., can even tobacco. I know that there is less people smoking these days, but it can actually happen. I don't know, Kate, would you like to add anything else?
Yeah, I think those are really good points. I mean, something, the point about devil's claw is exactly a good example of, just because they're controlled under the FVI doesn't mean you can't use them. You absolutely can use devil's claw, and it has its uses in horses that aren't in competition. But we would say, because it's on the FVI list, treat it like a medicine, keep it in your medicine cabinet. Really simple tips. We recommend if there are horses on the yard who are on medication or are on something like devil's claw, they get a bright red bucket. Bright red bucket, bright red stirrer, you know. So it's a different colour, as well as the hygiene, different colour. Staff training, make sure that everyone is aware of the risk and aware of the potential issues. There have been some cases, it's happened more than once, where maybe a member of staff on the yard has, let's say, been smoking something they shouldn't have been smoking, and then they might just relieve themselves at the back of the stable, the horse nibbles on the bed, and that has resulted in a positive test. It sounds silly, I know, but it has done. So things like that, and good hygiene for visitors as well, I think. You know, we don't have many positives to take from the pandemic, do we? But I think one thing we can take is that it taught us all about hygiene. So I think in this day and age, you can have a hand sanitizer on your entrance gate, and you can have a sign saying, please don't touch the competition horses, please don't feed the competition horses. You know, something very simple for any visitors to the yard. So yeah, there are some easy sort of practical wins that you can take there as well.
Definitely. And I think, and obviously these will apply to people through the levels as well, because clean sport rules, they apply to from grassroots all the way through to international. So even if you're on, say, a mixed livery yard, where I guess actually the risk is going to be much higher, because there's you know, substances and things that you don't necessarily realize are on the yard and are, and much more intermingling, I guess, of people going up and patting your horse as they walk down the aisle to see their own, just making sure that you're super clear about the fact that your horse is competing under these rules, you're avoiding these substances, please don't feed my horse treats as you go down the aisle, or mix in your feeds with everyone else's and things. It's just, as you say, it's about having that awareness and that education for everyone that these rules are in place, they apply to everyone. So we really need to be really, really careful about it.
And it's actually just about being quite professional. You know, if you're committed to your sport, then you know, you take those responsibilities on board in the yard as well, and whether that's talking to your yard manager or whether it's as a yard manager, it's talking to the people on your yard. You know, it's just about laying down some simple steps so that everybody's aware.
Because there can be some real consequences. We've talked about that, the fact there could be an impact on your horse's health and well-being, but if you are called up for testing, which, as we've said, can be across the levels, and you are found to have a prohibited or a banned substance within your horse's test sample, there are some real consequences. You could face a ban, you could face fines. So there are, you know, there's a real reason to do this aside from just looking after your horse and competing as fairly as you can. So there is a real, you know, there's a real reason to do this. Well, multiple reasons, I think, as
absolutely,
we've listed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we hear those consequences, don't we, in the press? So, and they don't, you know, they don't always come via the feed. I think that's worth saying as well. You know, we have, there are historical prohibited cases where there have been real significance coming from topical applications. At the Beijing Olympics, going back a while, I know, but I've been in this industry a while. I remember Beijing very well. And four riders from four different countries were expelled from the Beijing Olympics, mid-Olympics. And that was because of a topical application. That was not a feed. So it's just worth being aware of that. There isn't an equivalent scheme for applications, but what we recommend is, you know, definitely stick to equine brands. Hopefully all equine brands are at least thinking about clean sport when they put their formula together. You can't say that about nappy rash cream or whatever else we hear being applied to horses. Whoever makes nappy rash cream is not thinking about an Olympic horse. Or any horse through the levels, as you say. So do think about those. You know, as a manufacturer who do both applications and feed, we apply the same risk assessment to our applications as we do to our feed. So we look at the production and we look at the ingredients in exactly the same way as we would for feed. So I think that it's useful that we can bring that knowledge to that side of things. But, you know, even if it's not a supplement manufacturer you're buying from, please just stick to an equine manufacturer and maybe ask them what risk assessment they've done for clean sport, because it definitely can be applications as well as in the feed bucket.
And Margaret, I suppose as well, it's probably worth having a chat with your vet as well if you've got any concerns about anything, either you're feeding him or, as Kate's mentioned, the topical applications as well.
Yeah, exactly. I 100% agree with Kate. I think it's worth, when it comes to looking after a competition horse, it's always a multidisciplinary team, isn't it? So you want to know who is looking after your horse's nutrition as much as who is looking after your horse's healthcare, which will be your vet. So having everyone involved, having everyone on the same page, and particularly when it comes to using supplements, which, again, they may not have, or they certainly shouldn't have, any of those NOP substances, as we've discussed, but they may have some controlled substance, going back again to the example of the devil's claw, but there could be other examples such as plants which contain salicylates, which are metabolized into salicylic acid, which can have an anti-inflammatory effect. So this is something that can be present in a supplement, but this supplement should come with a warning or a withdrawal time, which reflects that the company knows that the concentration of that plant substance in that supplement has been studied so that it is flushed out or removed from the horse's body in a known period of time. And the way these things are worked out is generally because these are substances for which there is a known so-called screening limit. So the screening limit is basically the level of that substance in the horse's blood that can be detected by a validated method of testing. So I know this is getting a bit technical here, but the vet should be able to support you in terms of working out what is the adequate withdrawal time for that substance that you may be giving to your horse. So an example for devil's claw, in most products that are available on the market would be 5 days before competition, again, based on the fact that we know that this is how the horse's body deals with that substance, and that's the time that it should be withdrawn before competition. But I totally agree with you, Rachel, that your vet is probably the most knowledgeable person when it comes to detection times and withdrawal times, which, if anybody is interested, the detection time plus a safety margin to adjust for the fact that every horse is different leads you to the withdrawal time. So the withdrawal time pre-competition will always be longer than the actual detection time of that supplement. Of that substance.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, the other thing I would say is if you're looking at products that have, particularly if, you know, if it's a medication, then absolutely your vet will be able to advise you. If it's a supplement and you're competing regularly, I would get in touch with the manufacturer and say, well, actually, what alternatives do you have? You know, we can certainly recommend alternatives. You know, Devil's Claw, we actually only recommend for horses who are not competing. So have a chat. There should be no reason to sort of, within the supplement range, there should be no reason to sort of play this numbers game on withdrawal. And I would say just go and look for an alternative. And I think the other thing that's important to say with supplements when we're talking about this risk, Marga's absolutely right. Some of them, like valerian, like Devil's Claw, you know, they are not suitable. What can happen is that can lead to people thinking, oh, supplements aren't suitable. And that's actually not true. You know, the evidence is very, very clear from the FEI's own testing laboratories that the right supplement used within a competition horse's diet has no more risk than the right feed. You know, it's about choosing correctly in both feed and feed supplements, but it's not about being particularly worried about one or the other. So long as you're following those guidelines, so long as you're using the Betanops logo, then there is no more risk to feeding the right supplement than there is to feeding the right feed.
Very well summarised there. We've obviously covered quite a lot of information here, and you know, in a way, we've only just brushed the surface. Hopefully, we've touched on the most important points. But there are, you know, if people are listening and they want more details about what we've been talking about, or they want to read up on this a little bit more, what resources are available out there for them to go and have a look at?
So the Vita website and that company checker that Kate mentioned is probably a very, very good starting point, especially if you want to figure out initially whether the supplier that you're using for your feed or your supplement is accredited. Then the FEI has quite an extensive hub of information when it comes to prohibited substances, but I question whether it is very user-friendly unless you are a vet, and even if you are a vet, I should say. But they also launched an app last year, which it has a section that allows you to check ingredients directly to know at least if they are including the prohibited substances list or not. I know we've been talking obviously about BE and FEI all along, but in racing, all of these rules apply as well. And with regards to the to racing, the IFHA does have information on their website, and there also are rules that apply to racing in certain countries. So for example, in Scandinavian countries, NEMAC, which is their regulatory body for racing, will have specific rules for prohibited substances and detection times for both gallop and trotter racing. Yeah. And then the German Equestrian Federation also has their specific set of rules.
Yeah, so if you're competing in Germany or Scandinavia, if you're competing at an FEI competition in those countries, then the FEI list will apply. If you're competing in a national competition, then you need to be aware of the national, the national lists, which are slightly different to the FEI list in those areas.
Very good. If you're wanting to find that company checker that has been mentioned several times and the full list of the NOPS products on the Beta website, you can find that at beta-uk.org. There are also resources available on the British Equestrian website for both human and equine anti-doping, and there's also a full list of best practice tips as well. Some of the ones obviously we've mentioned so far today, you can find that at britishequestrian.org.uk, and if you go under the competitors tab, there are both options there for human and equine, so do check those out if you are competing. As we've said several times, these rules apply at all levels of competition. So even if you're heading out for your first prelim dressage test or BE80, or, you know, first time out show jumping, give them a check, have a read, have a look, make sure you understand the rules, because you could be called up for testing. And it's probably also worth mentioning, we have briefly touched on the FEI, their prohibited substances list, that gets updated on the 1st of January each year. And it is your responsibility as a competitor to make sure that you have checked those revisions and you are aware of any changes and adjusted your management of your horses accordingly. So do make sure that you have a look at that when the new list comes out. We're coming rapidly to the end of this, but have either of you got any kind of anything maybe we've missed or any key takeaways for our listeners that they should be really, really keeping in mind as they go back to their yards and their horses?
I think my thing would be just remember your own responsibility. You know, we as manufacturers, we have a responsibility, but if we're honest, that responsibility ends when our product arrives at the feed merchant, at the tack shop. When you buy that product and take it home to the yard, it's your responsibility. So be aware of your own responsibilities and just treat it professionally. Keep records. You know, we do a feed and supplement logbook. If you're going competing, make a note of all the feeds and all the supplements you're using with their batch numbers. Go into it with a professional outlook and make sure that you're using beta NOPs.
Yeah, I think I agree very much with that. I would also add communication. So communicate with your team, communicate with your vets. And if anything wrong should happen, communicate with the authorities and cooperate with the investigation, which is always made somewhat easier if you know what practices are in place and you can refer back to a reputable company.
Brilliant. Thank you very much so much for joining us today and for sharing your wisdom once again. I hope you've enjoyed talking to us today.
Yeah, it's been lovely. Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
We have loved having you. And thank you to everyone at home who is listening. We hope you will join us soon for another podcast episode. And also, if you haven't yet, make sure you check out our back catalogue of episodes. As I mentioned, Kate and Margaret were sharing their insight into nutrition across your horse's lifetime for Equine Health Week. And we covered lots of other really interesting topics there for all the key milestones in your horse's life from conception all the way through to the end. And there's also loads of other really interesting stuff on there. There's a series of episodes that we did for Female Health February. There's previous iterations of Equine Health Week as well, with lots of other topics and some one-off episodes as well. I think one of the most recent ones we had was all about stress and how you can manage that when you're competing. So do give those a listen. Whichever platform it is that you found this one on, you will find them there. So take a look. Thank you very much, everyone, and we hope you will join us again soon.